we always talk about hypothyroidism happening. Low thyroid people are tired and they need levothyroxine. But many times when patients have hypothyroidism, that hypothyroidism is preceded by a period of hyperthyroidism due to thyroiditis. So you get started with the checkpoint blockade, the thyroid gland gets really, really inflamed, spewing out free T4 all through the body, and people can get really sick with that. They lose tons of weight. They can develop tachyarrhythmias, like this patient had atrial fibrillation that had been happening.
So the patient was clinically hyperthyroid.
Clinically hyperthyroid.
I thought that usually that's thought to be like silent.
Sometimes it can be silent and you just see the TSH go down and the free T4 go up. But sometimes people can be really symptomatic with hyperthyroidism from thyroiditis. And then the inclination is always, I'm going to give an anti-thyroid drug like methimazole, for example, or propylthiouracil to try to block the thyroid hormone secretion. But the reality is that this is not necessarily always like a Graves' disease hyperthyroidism. This is because the thyroid gland is like a factory on fire that's just spewing out thyroid hormone everywhere.
Right. I mean, they don't have exophthalmus, obviously.
Correct. They don't have exophthalmus, exactly. Exactly. So
it's really chemical hyperthyroidism as opposed to, you know, the autoimmune hyperthyroidism.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the thyroid gland is not necessarily...
It's immune hyperthyroidism. I don't know.
It's all immune related, but it's like if you think about the thyroid gland as a factory, it's not necessarily that the factory production of the thyroid hormone is enhanced, which would be the case in Graves' disease. I like to think of it, the factory is just on fire and everything is just kind of spewing out of this factory that's on fire with the thyroid hormone.
So interesting.
The point, I think, for the education about what to do in this situation is really to tell patients this will burn out over time because you'll eventually become hypothyroidism when this inflamed thyroid gland dies down a little bit. To treat that hyperthyroid phase with symptomatic treatment as needed, like beta blockers or even sometimes low doses of steroids to tampen down the inflammation that's going on, that can help. And then be ready to start levothyroxine, because what will happen is that the thyroid hormone will eventually start to go down, the TSH will start to rise. And then, you know, you're hypothyroid. So be ready to start levothyroxine, even in someone who's hyperthyroid. Don't start it at the time that they're hyperthyroid, but just wait and be mindful that you're going to need to start it soon. So I've had people lose tons of weight and then gain tons of weight once they get to that hypothyroid phase.
So how long was it after the first dose of Ipi/Nivo that this started to appear clinically?
Only a few weeks later.
Wow.
Pretty soon afterwards. And that was the first toxicity that this person experienced. And usually the thyroid problems can happen later with PD-1 single agent, but this was a situation where the hyperthyroidism happened pretty early and the thyroiditis.
So then what?
Once that got under control, then unfortunately we had other toxicities that kind of manifest themselves. So namely, this patient developed two other toxicities, hepatitis and pancreatitis. And one of the reasons that I suspected thyroiditis was initially the cause is because his liver was inflamed right around the time that the thyroid gland was overly active. So usually these kinds of things happen as a constellation of different symptoms altogether, especially with the combination of 3 mg/kg of ipilimumab and the lower dose of Nivo that this patient received. So the hepatitis was treated with steroids, and I was using the steroids to also dampen the thyroid inflammation. But once that situation got better, then the pancreas got inflamed. And pancreatitis is a very interesting side effect that we're still really just trying to learn, how do you manage immune-related pancreatitis? Do you need to put people in the hospital and give them fluids and hydration and bowel rest like you may manage normally?
They have pain and the whole scenario? Is that what this man had? Pain? He was sick?
Exactly. Epigastric pain.
Wow.
Some kind of low-level nausea, poor appetite. And it's really, those are non-specific symptoms. So you have to think.
How high were his enzymes?
Amylase and lipase were in the several hundreds, but sometimes in some patients it can go in the thousands. So I don't really believe in checking amylase and lipase in people who are asymptomatic, because many times it'll go up and down, and people with abdominal disease like cancer in their abdomen will have high amylase and lipase values. And I don't think that that's reflective of pancreatitis. But when you have someone who's symptomatic, I do suggest checking amylase and lipase, especially with that characteristic epigastric pain and poor appetite. And many times when you get a CAT scan or if you get a PET scan in these situations, the pancreas will be enlarged, it will be inflamed, and this is something you also have to talk to your radiologist about, because they won't necessarily look for it. We're all good at looking for colitis. I think there's a lot of familiarity with colitis or enteritis, small bowel inflammation that can happen with these immune checkpoint inhibiting drugs. But it's important to pay attention to the pancreas as well, because with more attention on this, we're seeing pancreatic inflammation. I haven't seen anyone with terrible pancreatitis, like pseudocysts, needing to be in the hospital for weeks on TPN, that kind of really severe case, fortunately. Most cases of immune-related pancreatitis have been successfully treated with prednisone. I've used infliximab in some cases as well, and people do get better from this.
So all this is going on in the first two cycles of treatment, right?
Yeah, very early on, within the first month or two of treatment.
I'm kind of curious. I don't know if you could feel the node or, you know, I guess you could see the primary. What was going on with the disease that you could see and feel?
So we had a hard time really seeing the disease in the back of the mouth. It was something that showed up on an MRI. But one of the issues that I usually like to do is when after someone's been dealing with such toxicity, you can't treat them with more immune therapy drugs. So I like to image to see where are we with the melanoma, or where are we with the cancer right now? Is this continuing to progress and am I going to really need to be worried about this, or is this patient already having a response? And I think in many cases, when someone's going through terrible toxicity like this, you will see a disease response. And there's nothing that'll make someone feel better psychologically than reassuring them that their cancer is behaving in the way that we want to do. So yes, you feel sick because you're having pancreatitis and thyroiditis and hepatitis or colitis or hypophysitis or whatever it is, but your cancer is really going in the right direction. And then the good news is most of these side effects will resolve with time with treatment with immunosuppressants. As long as the cancer is heading in the right direction, then we should do well. This patient's cancer was going in the right direction. So the thing in the mouth was shrinking, the lymph node was fine, the brain metastases were also responding gently. So that was very, very reassuring. And the message at that point was, we need to hold immune therapy, nurse through these side effects, and hope that we continue that response even if we discontinue immune therapy permanently.